Green Bay has selected from Louisville quarterback Brian Fromm.
Fromm wants to throw. Looking for McBroom. Over the shoulder catch, and it's another touchdown and another big play by the Trinity offense.
Brian Brom's upside is greater than that of Aaron Rodgers.
Welcome to the next episode of What's Next with Eric Wood, presented by Green Remedy. Our next guest is Brian Brom. After an illustrious high school career where he was featured on the cover of Sports Illustrated, he was a teammate of mine at the University of Louisville. We came in together in 2004 and have been great friends ever since. He was the starting quarterback for a number of program-defining wins at UofL, including the 2006 Orange Bowl. He was a second-round pick to the Green Bay Packers and spent 8 years playing professional football, including time in the NFL, the Canadian Football League, and the UFL. There's something about a center-quarterback relationship that strengthens the bond, and I feel like that will show itself through this podcast. If you haven't yet rated and subscribed, I would ask that you do that now to help us out. Enjoy. Today's show is brought to you by our title sponsor, Green Remedy. Green Remedy is a company based out of Louisville that I have grown to love. I use their full-spectrum CBD oil products to help with pain, anxiety, and sleep. I have loved using this product, and I love how clean their product is. I have seen the raw materials from the farm, and I was walked through the entire process. I am passionate about getting people off medications, and using an 100% all-natural product like this is so much better for you than pumping pills all day, anti-inflammatories, and stuff that I had to do throughout my career to get by. And now that I'm done, I'm not pain-free, but this CBD oil has helped dramatically and get me off of all those anti-inflammatories and painkillers that are so bad for you. Go to greenremedy.com and use code EWOOD70 at checkout to get 10% off your order, and use the auto ship feature so that you can stay consistent because you will love the results. Again, that's greenremedy.com, code EWOOD70. Our next guest on What's Next with Eric Wood is Brian Brom. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, man. It's an honor to be here. I've checked out your show and seen a lot of the guys you had, so it's quite an impressive list, so I'm honored to join that list.
For sure, dude. And when we talk about transitions, one of my favorite ones is the transition out of ball, and what you've done since in coaching is something we'll get to. But let's start off like we do with most guests. Talk to me about growing up in Louisville, the sports you played through high school.
Yeah, so obviously grew up in Louisville in a suburb called Fern Creek. Most of the sports I played were Fern Creek Optimus or at St. Bernard is where I went to grade school. So grew up playing about every single sport. My dad coached most of them. Played football, basketball, baseball every single year. Threw volleyball in there, soccer, basically about every sport you can play. So we obviously were a big sports family. I'm the youngest of four, as most people in Louisville know. Older brothers, while I was growing up, we were playing at Louisville. So, like, my parents would take me to my flag football game, and then we'd go to a Louisville football game where my brothers were the starting quarterback and starting receiver.
That's wild.
And my dad obviously played at Louisville. So a lot of pressure to kind of meet expectations, even from that early of an age, which really made me probably a better player, younger than most, and, you know, having – a dad who played, brothers who were playing that could coach you and teach you the games obviously helped me a lot. So was always trying to kind of live up to the Brom name. And, you know, I kind of have a, you know, when I was growing up, my brothers obviously were very successful, and they were kind of that desired point I wanted to get to. I wanted to be just like them. But my mom would keep this scrapbook in the basement that had basically everything my brothers had ever done when they were my age. So I always had this attainable goal that I could get to. I wanted to throw for more yards than my brother. I wanted to score more points in basketball. So I'll go down and look at that scrapbook, and as I was growing up, would always make sure that I was doing better than them, which most of the time I got there.
That is so much different than how I grew up.
No doubt.
I also grew up playing multiple sports, but there was never anything, you know, there was never any – I know they weren't putting that pressure right. necessarily intentionally on you, but there just wasn't a whole lot of pressure, and maybe that is part of the reason why I developed later. I also didn't have older brothers that were
– Right, so basically, like, you know, I would go play a basketball game, and my dad would be the coach, and I'd have two brothers that were in their 20s. One was either one was in the NFL, one was just out of college – and they would come back and critique and coach me up. So, like, I would, you know, there was an instance where I remember vividly. I scored 33 points in a Fern Creek Optimus basketball game. We won the game barely. I thought I did pretty good. I came home. Both my brothers were at the game, and I think it was, like, on a Saturday or Sunday. So we were just hanging out at the house, and they had me in the backyard for about 2.5 hours.
Wow.
Playing basketball, telling me what I needed to do better for the next time. So not most kids get to grow up with that kind of instruction, for sure.
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure, but that's a lot of privilege, too. You know, we had Chris Burke on the show, and he talked about, you know, taking his boys outside and working batting practice. I'm
for
like,
sure.
How cool would it have been to, you know, and he's got the neighborhood kids out there with him. How cool would
Absolutely.
It have been to have a pro baseball player in your neighborhood teaching you stuff? And that's similar.
And a lot of times, like his kids, I hope they appreciate and know who he is and how much knowledge he has, because sometimes you don't want to listen to your dad or to your brother, but you know, obviously I grew up in a household where they had a lot of knowledge, and you know, you would reluctantly take their advice and listen, and at the end of the day you realize that it was good advice.
Yeah, one thing that stuck out, what you said, which many guys say, is multiple sports. What's your thoughts on specialization nowadays with young kids?
You know, even as a coach now, we look for guys that are playing multiple sports. If you can see a guy play basketball or see him in a different setting to really gauge his overall athleticism, especially football players, I think it's very helpful that they have those other skill sets that you can gain hand-eye coordination in baseball or your athleticism while you're playing basketball. Definitely translate to football. So I think for football players, it is very beneficial to play multiple sports. I know some of the other sports, maybe football doesn't cross over as good too, but in football, that raw athleticism of basketball, the hand-eye coordination, it translates big time.
I agree, and that's been a common theme on the show, and all the dads listening out there, you know, you're hearing from a college coach, a college football coach, saying he's looking for multiple sport athletes. And I always say, you know, if you have a son and he truly, that's all he wants to do, then that's fine. You can let him do it, but a lot of times I feel it's outside pressure that's putting these kids into one sport. I have a neighbor whose son is really good at basketball. He's 12 years old, and all he wants to do is play basketball, and that's fine. Do that.
Right.
But don't pressure him. And I'm not saying he's pressuring him, but there are situations I've seen with baseball dads. We can see him at the gym all the time that'll say, "How do I get my kid to the next level?" And I'm like, "Well, what's the next level? How old is he?" He's 11.
You know, sometimes some coaches will try to steer them to specialize, but there are a lot of coaches out there that I talk to in recruiting, and they want their guys as well to play multiple sports, which I think is great. But sometimes those coaches want to have their hands on them all the time and don't want them distracted. But it's more so the other sports. It seems like almost every football coach is, we'd like them to play basketball. We'd like them to run track, try to develop their speed. So hopefully the other sports are the same way, where they want their athletes to be able to be functional in multiple facets.
Good deal. So you go to Trinity High School. We had a big showdown our junior years of high school. And I'll preface this story by saying our scouting report at the time said it was the second game of the year. We're playing at Ryle High School in Northern Kentucky. And we were both top 10 in the country. And our scouting report was they had an above-average quarterback with a good arm, something along those lines. We did not know what we were getting into, and I'll let you tell the story. You're the guest.
I'm surprised you actually bring it up and let me talk about the Trinity Elder game.
Well, I'm going to grill you later, so I'm going to let you build yourself up now.
You know, it was it's surprising that their report was so – it wasn't low on me, but it wasn't as high as it probably needed to be. Because I did have a good sophomore season.
I think it was lazy.
We won the state championship the year before. But I will say that, you know, I watched with my offensive coordinator, Andrew Coverdale, we watched Elder film all summer long. So I knew the cover two you were going to be playing. It was a game that I was hyped for the entire offseason. Was really looking forward to playing you guys, knowing the tradition you had and how good you guys were supposed to be. But I will say I was in the zone that game. Hitting on all cylinders, was making some athletic plays that maybe I don't normally make. But it was one of those games where I looked up at halftime and it was, you know, when you feel it and you're feeling good. I vividly remember looking at the scoreboard. I'm on my knee. I'm like, man, I am in the zone. I feel good.
Was it a 2-point game at halftime and then y'all kind of busted it
up? Yeah, I think it was pretty close at half, but I just had a feeling about me that, you know, I'm feeling it. I have these guys figured out. There's no way they're stopping me.
Yeah, well, we leave the game and we're very distraught. You know, we were obviously, like I said, top 10 in the country. We're distraught we lost, but we were on our way home like, wow, we got beat by a really good player. I wonder where he's going to go. So when I finally started getting recruited by Louisville the next year and you were potentially going to go there and your brother was recruiting me, all my buddies are like, dude, you got to follow that guy to college. and we'll transition to your recruiting process from there. I know you were recruited by everyone in the country and you ended up at U of L. Was there – talk a little bit about the recruiting process, and then was there outside pressure from your family just seeing that your brothers and your dad played ball at Louisville?
You know, there was – I grew up a Louisville fan. I always wanted to go to Louisville. So it was kind of the other schools had to come in and show me why I shouldn't go there. But – obviously, it was heavy interest early on. I think the big interest came after my junior season, after the state championship game when threw for, whatever, 700 yards and against Male. That's when everybody kind of started coming after me, and they kind of already were, but it was basically all the big names in the country. It came down really to – I didn't want to leave kind of the regional area of Louisville, so I was looking at schools – kind of within a five-hour radius. So Tennessee was one of them. Phil Fulmer was in the school quite a bit, recruiting me very hard. Notre Dame was another one that, obviously being Catholic, was a good opportunity. And then I looked at Kentucky and Illinois and Louisville. Those were kind of my final five. Tennessee was probably the hardest one on me. Went down there for a game. It was an amazing atmosphere. They basically promised me I was going to start as a true freshman. They were going to bring another quarterback in. I'd have to beat him out. He's going to be an athletic guy. But they handed me the keys, said, you're going to be the guy.
Played Rocky Top in the
played
gym.
Rocky Top. Yeah, you know, I got to direct the band to Rocky Top. Not sure if you're allowed to do that anymore. They picked me up on the private plane, flew me down there.
Wow.
That was allowed back then and is not allowed anymore.
Wow.
So they pulled out all the stops. Ended up they kind of put the pressure on me. I think they had Eric Ainge was, I think, ready to commit to them. So they kind of were pushing me to commit. And that turned me off a little bit. And it turned – the one thing that turned us off and turned my mom off the most was – I think Phil Fulmer, he made a comment that, well, you can come here, and if it doesn't work out, you can always go back to Louisville. And,
wow.
Kind of took that as an insult to Louisville, and you don't want to do that to our family, so that one kind of went out
Donna
the way.
Donna was not happy.
That kind of went out the way. Notre Dame had Brady Quinn. I liked a lot of things about Notre Dame, but Brady Quinn started as a true freshman. I was going to have to sit behind him for at least 3 years probably.
Or beat him out.
But their coaches were very high on him. They liked him a lot.
Yeah, he had an incredible college
career. For understandable reasons. And then, you know, Louisville, like I said, always grew up wanting to play there. The big thing for me was – there were two things. Was Coach Petrino's offense was what I wanted to be in, what I wanted to be doing. I thought I was a perfect fit for it. And then them, right, you know, kind of during my recruiting process – knowing that they were going to get into the Big East and have a chance to play in BCS bowl games, that was huge. So once that happened, it was kind of a no-brainer for me. Even though, you know, you had Stephon LaForce, who was going to be the starter. Michael Bush was still there. They did move him to running back right before I committed. So that kind of eased those concerns a little bit. But
was that
pressure,
a recruiting ploy?
You know, for Michael?
Yeah.
I think they had intention. I think once they knew they were going to kind of get me, they maybe pushed him to running back a little
more. Well, we had to get both of you guys on the field at the same time. But that happening right before you commit.
Right, right. So I think they wanted to move him there, even though he did have big time potential quarterback as well. I mean, he could sling it. But I think it all kind of fell into place, and my family pressure wise, I think they knew that they didn't really have to pressure me. I think my dad wanted me to go to Louisville. They wanted me to stay in town. I think there's probably a lot of pressure on Jeff. He was the quarterback coach
right
at the time. I'm sure Bobby was on him every day. Like, why is he not committed yet?
Bobby wouldn't have put pressure
on him. Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure every day it was pressure. But I didn't love the recruiting process per se. So, honestly, Louisville kind of left me alone a little bit. I kind of liked that. They let me go out and look, do my thing, and then come to my own conclusion, which was that it was the best spot.
Was your brother your main recruiter?
He was, really. Bobby would call, or Jeff would call and have Bobby get on the phone. It was Jeff, so he didn't have to do a whole lot. I already knew everything I needed to know about him. So,
gotcha. So we played in a bunch of memorable games at UofL together. Come in, we're roommates after our freshman year. A lot of fun times. What was your favorite game we played in at UofL?
Shoot, man. Probably the West Virginia win was one that you remember for all time, even though a week later it was the flip, the worst game of all time. So that week period was probably the biggest fluctuations of emotions of all time. So beating West Virginia on the blackout, that was huge. Obviously beating Miami at home, fans rushing the field, that was probably right there with it, even though I got hurt the second quarter and Hunter came in and did a phenomenal job. But those wins, I think, were kind of program-building wins that we've been looking for a long time.
Yeah, as you look past me, there's a picture of us playing in the Orange
Bowl.
Yeah,
you got the Orange Bowl.
Yeah.
You got the Orange Bowl, and obviously that was a program-defining win and a great game to play in. The other two, I think, were a little more hyped and a little more exciting finishes or exciting celebrations. But the Orange Bowl's definitely right up there with it.
I agree. As I think back, and I've been asked that before, I always say the West Virginia blackout game. The Miami game comes to mind from that 2006 season as well. But those are special times. I forgot that Rutgers defeat in Piscataway was one week after
Thursday night to Thursday night.
That was crushing. And we'll move on quickly. What led to your decision to come back for your senior year? And do you wish you would have done it different, or you're just –
You know, I am happy with the way that played out. And I tell people all the time, you know, if my NFL career obviously didn't go the way I wanted it to or planned it to, if that would have happened and I came out early, I would be full of big time regrets. So I'm happy that I decided to stay. I wanted to try to do something special at Louisville. I wanted to try to give it one more run to where we could have a big time year and hopefully try to get to that national championship game that we were so close to getting to the year before. Obviously that didn't play out. I do think I learned a lot from that senior year and was able to have some good games and good moments within that year, even though we still end up just 6-6. But playing 4 years at Louisville, it was always a dream of mine to play there, to shorten that and to see the way that my career ended up playing out, I would definitely probably be pretty bitter if I did come out early and that happened.
I agree. I when people ask me the same thing, I often say the exact same thing, you know, and it did work out for a number of years in the NFL and ended up having the career-ending injury and all that. But, you know, I could have left after my redshirt sophomore year potentially.
Right.
And our coaches had left, and it would have made sense to. But – if you come back and enjoy the experience of college, then you played it out. You're not going to regret it. But I do tell guys nowadays, the way free agency works, if you can leave, just get out as fast as you can and get to the league and make your money.
Right. You know, financially, yes, it is more beneficial to get out, start making money, get to the second contract. So in a financial sense, you want to get to where you're getting paid as quick as possible.
Right. Talk about your time in the NFL. I mean, do you credit not having big-time success in the NFL to opportunities and that kind of deal? Because when I look at it, you get drafted to the Packers who have Aaron Rodgers, and that's a tough situation. You go to the Bills from there, and there right. we already have Fitzpatrick, and then based upon injuries, you get a couple starts. And in those starts, we have such a depleted roster, you never truly got a chance to put your best foot forward.
I think it's a combination of things. I think a lot of times it's the situation that you're in and the opportunities you're given and what you do with those opportunities. I don't think – you know, I wasn't fortunate to have a ton of opportunities given to me throughout my 3 years in the NFL. You know, I got off to a rocky start, had a bad first preseason, first training camp, where Aaron was starting for his first year. Then Matt Flynn was drafted the same class as me, kind of bumped up in front of me. And then I kind of was stuck there for the 2 years till I got to Buffalo and was able to get opportunity in Buffalo to play. Those situations and playing, yes, they weren't ideal, but a lot of guys don't get ideal situations. And those opportunities I had, I did not come through and make the most of them. You know, I say, oh, if you get one more opportunity, it's going to click, it's going to happen, which is your belief at all times. But I didn't get another one. So I end up after the NFL, and I'm trying to get back in. So I play in the UFL, play in Canada, and learn a lot and have a lot of fun playing in those leagues as well.
I agree. And you know, if the AAFL or the AAF just crumbled, a league like that needs to stick. The NFL, in my opinion, needs to get behind one because there's guys like you and there's a number of quarterbacks out there. There's also a ton of offensive linemen out there that need an opportunity, needed to develop, and not necessarily that you weren't groomed and needed development,
right.
But there's guys with so much talent that just don't get the opportunities because there's only 32 quarterbacks that are going to start on a Sunday and 64 generally on rosters.
It's tough now to develop quarterbacks, especially with some of the new rules. They're taking away some of practice time. The starting quarterbacks obviously need to get most of the reps, and then the backups got to kind of fight for those rest of the reps. And teams used to keep three quarterbacks, and they used to develop guys. Now they're normally keeping two, and they might keep another guy on practice squad that can be kind of a hybrid athletic guy that can do some different things for them. So they're for quarterbacks for sure. If you want to develop guys, there does need to be a developmental league, kind of like they had with NFL Europe, where you got your Kurt Warner out of there, you got Jake Delhomme out of there. Quite a few guys went over there, kind of unknown, played well, and then had long NFL careers.
And playing Super Bowls.
Exactly. And you're not getting that now because, you know, guys are being drafted to start. So if you're not a first-round draft pick, you're basically have an uphill climb to become a starter and to be able to play in the NFL. And the guys that do it are resilient. They get an opportunity through injury or some other way, and they make the most of that opportunity. So if you're not that first-round pick, you better be ready to play as soon as that first opportunity hits and show that you have what it takes. Because really, only those first-round guys, they're going to get start after start till they prove they can't do it.
Right. You look at a guy like Matt Barkley with the Bills right now. He bounces around and bounces around, gets one opportunity to play.
Played well.
Because of two injuries in Buffalo. Gets an opportunity, plays well. Now he's got a two-year contract, and Derek Anderson retires, and now he's the Bills' backup. Right. And it's crazy how just – without a developmental league, you need an opportunity like that, and you get one shot. And a lot of guys, if they had more than one shot, it could have worked out differently.
Right. No doubt.
So you transition out of the NFL. What was the hardest part about transitioning out of football and then getting into coaching?
For me, it was kind of a more gradual thing than kind of what you've gone through. Just because I had played in these other leagues, I played in the UFL, I was playing in Canada. So while I was playing in these leagues, there was always in the back of my mind, what am I going to do next? This isn't going to last forever. Well, where am I going to go? And the NFL was kind of – I played 5 years in alternative leagues, two in the UFL, three in Canada. And really my last year in the CFL had some opportunity. Ended up not taking advantage of that opportunity like I should have and was kind of seeing the writing on the wall that it's going to be a grind to kind of stick around. I probably could have hung on for another year or two and maybe got another chance. But for me, coaching was always kind of in the back of my mind. And obviously with Jeff being a head coach, he was at Western Kentucky. That year, his quarterback coach and offensive coordinator left for USC, and the CFL season was over. I kind of had a feeling that this might not – they might be calling me this offseason. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
So I told Jeff, I said, hey, if you don't have to hire anybody quick, just kind of hang on a little bit. I think I might want to jump into coaching. So he kind of hung on. I get a call from the Bombers. They were releasing me. Gave it another couple weeks just to fish out and see what other teams maybe were interested. Wasn't a ton of interest right away, so I said, this is an opportunity I need to go take. Need to go get my foot into the coaching door in a way that, to be quite frank, you don't have to be a GA or a QC and start at the bottom. I was able to start as a quarterback coach and be that position coach right away, and that's kind of a big deal. So it really set the ground level for my coaching career and got me kind of kicked off pretty quickly.
Yeah, I always say God's timing's perfect, and in my opinion, that was perfect timing for the Canada deal to work the way it did, because then you got to go down to Western for a couple years and be a position coach and not go the GA route. And then when your brother gets the Big Ten job with Purdue, they're not saying, oh, you can't hire your brother because he has no experience. You've been a two-year coach and one-year coordinator, I believe. And so when you made the transition.
I was actually there just 1 year. I started as a QB coach, and he promoted me to a coordinator right before the season. So I was there for 1 year. We had a great year. We won Conference USA. The quarterback played phenomenally. Mike White, who's now with the Dallas Cowboys, was a fourth-round pick. Both my quarterbacks, even Tyler Ferguson was the backup. He got some time with the Titans. So we had a good quarterback room, and I was fortunate to have those guys. And, they made me look like a really good coach. So, he was comfortable being able to bring me to Purdue with him. And we've had some success at Purdue as well.
A lot of success. What's been the best part of coaching and the worst?
The best part of coaching, I think, is really the relationship with the players, the game day atmosphere, and then just the joy and excitement you can see on your players' faces when you win that big game. Like when you win the Ohio State game and you got players crying in the locker room and the joy and excitement that it brings to them to play the game and to know that you helped them achieve that goal. Really the worst part is the grind, the hours, the time away from family. And I work for a great head coach, my brother, who is a family man and tries to give you as much time as possible to be able to spend with your family, to relax, to kind of clear your head a little bit. But even so, it's still a grind. There's a lot of things that need to be done as far as coaching, recruiting. You could work 24/7 if you really wanted to. You have to tell yourself to stop and to take a break.
Right. And coaching is something that appealed to me and something that still appeals to me. I would love it. I would absolutely love to be in a football building. The hours really scare me, and not that I'm afraid to work hard.
Right.
They scare me because of how much time I would be out of my house. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for coaches, college, NFL, even high school coaches put a tremendous amount of hours in nowadays. I have so much respect for them and the impact of so many lives that they can, but, man, the hours are tough.
The ability to stay within the competition and the camaraderie of the team, I think that is the appealing part. And as you say, those hours, especially during the season, you really can't change them. You can't, I need to take a day off. No, this game's coming up quick. You got to get ready.
Yeah, well, I'll give Brian credit. He's over at my house recording this podcast, and his wife or kids are upstairs with my wife and kids. So he's getting some family time.
Yeah,
and
it takes a special woman to be the wife of a coach as well, because you do put in those hours, and they're left kind of being a single parent a lot of the time. And whenever you have an opportunity, like we're kind of off right now, when you have opportunity to be with the family and to Help the wife out. It's always special to give her that break.
Yeah, she's great. So Brian met Ashley in Buffalo, and we've always been close through that. My wife and her wife are great friends, and it's been fun. What would your ultimate goal in coaching be?
You know, I've thought about that quite a bit lately. I think I do want to be a head coach. There's a few things. You know, I would like to be a head coach and run my own program and see if some of these ideas I have about the way you want to do things, the way you want to run your operation, how you want to set it up, if these things would work or not. Because I have some ideas. They might be good. They might be terrible.
Is one cutting back hours?
Of course. But that might be a terrible idea. But I think there is a, you know, at some points there's a more efficient way to do things that you don't have to kill everybody all the time. But when I become a head coach, I might not think that's correct anymore. But, you know, I'd like to be a head coach. I would like to at some point coach the National Football League with the best of the best and see if you know, I can stand up to that kind of challenge to be able to coach somebody that is superiorly talented and to be able to scheme up some of the best coaches in the country versus the best talent. I do find that appealing. So those are kind of the two avenues I would like to hit through my coaching cycle. But really, I'm not you know, I'm not the guy that's going to try to be moving and shaking all the time and having the end goal be everything I look for every day. I like the day-to-day grind of it. I like the quarterback room. I like the camaraderie. And I like what we're doing at Purdue. So, you know, I'd like to stick there and see things through and to see how much success we could have there without always trying to look for the next best thing. You know, all coaches, I think, have that end goal in mind where they would like to probably be a head coach or coach at the highest level.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll give you an endorsement. You know, at 33 years old, you know, I go up to Purdue last year and step into the meeting room, really impressed. And then watching you command the offensive meeting room with the full offense in there the night before the game was impressive to me because I've never seen you in that setting.
Right.
You know, as a player, even though you were the leader of our offense, you know, it's us in the huddle or yep. It's us on the sideline, and it's emotional and it's not necessarily, you know, game planning. And I loved how complimentary of guys you were. I loved how confident you were, which is kind of the newer age of how you got to respond to these kids. And I was impressed by that because the coaching that we saw a lot in college was more demeaning and demanding. Which...
Right, and I think I probably got more of that from being in the pros. Just treating them – I try to treat especially my quarterback room because I got super brilliant guys in there. They go to Purdue. A lot of them are studying engineering. They're probably, you know, book smart. They're probably a little bit smarter than me, even though I try to say I'm pretty smart. But these guys are smart. So I try to treat them like adults. I tell them all the time, I'm going to treat you like a pro until you show me that I need to treat you like a kid. And my guys have been great. They've conducted themselves like professionals, and that's kind of what we expect. So that's kind of the treatment we give them back.
Good deal. I'll be waiting on my invite up again this year. Purdue started 0-3, which is a huge shocker this year. And I came up for the Boston College game.
You got to say that mojo working. We beat the top 25 team. And, that's credit to you coming up.
I was not there for Ohio State, though. So whoever was in town that weekend, keep that going.
Right.
Let's switch gears back to high school for a second. So in high school, you're on the cover of Sports Illustrated. How tough was all of that attention, and how tough was it to stay grounded and stay hungry? And you know, I'm not sure I personally could have handled that.
You know, I think for me, just the way I grew up with the brothers that I had, with the dad that I had, just them already being kind of recognized within the community of Louisville, within that Trinity community, there was already a high expectation. So getting on the cover of Sports Illustrated, I was pretty focused in high school for sure, to where that didn't really get to my head as much as you think it would. And I think it was because of the way I was brought up and the expectations that kind of maybe they were self-thought of, but I felt it where, you know, I'm in seventh grade and I go to a Trinity game and you know, a fan points over and says, hey, there's the young Brom kid. Wait till he gets here. And like, oh, man, I better be pretty good when I get right here. These people are expecting something. So just kind of that expectation had already been there. Now, Sports Illustrated is another deal. But it kind of it did blow up. It was kind of huge, deal, obviously, within the high school, within the community. But I kind of – yeah, I was able to stay focused. I think it was a tribute to my parents, to my brother, to my coaches, and to my teammates to a certain extent where, you know, everybody kind of was holding me in check a little bit, making sure I was still doing everything I was supposed to do, and I was as well. So, yeah, that's kind of actually a proud moment in my life where I stayed grounded and just kept grinding towards the goal.
Right. When we came into U of L together, I would have – the way you treated people, the way you acted, the way you worked, you would have never guessed, oh, that guy was on the cover of Sports Illustrated Junior, and that's right. A compliment to you. I believe I know this answer, just knowing how football runs in your family, but would you let your son Weston play football?
Yeah. Yes, I would. You know, and I get all the safety and health concerns. I think a lot of those things are being addressed within the game. It is good that they're doing all the research on head collisions and CTE and all those different things that they're doing, and the heads-up football where they're teaching them the proper way to tackle. I think there's efforts to make the game safer. The big hit that was once glorified and everyone was seeking out back when me and you were growing up and playing, a huge hit over the middle, that was something you got excited about. Now it's being flagged. It's a personal foul. Kids are taught not to do it. They're getting chewed out when they do it, when they used to get celebrated. So I think the game's cleaned up a little bit. You will, you know, as we both know, the longer you play football, it is a contact game. You are getting tackled. It's really not if you're going to get hurt. It's when right. when you're going to get hurt. But I'm okay with that. For all the things that football instills in you, the life values that you learn, the teamwork, everything that football's about, I love it. I would love my son to be involved. Now, I'm not going to force him to be. I'm not going to push him to be. But, yeah, I would love for him to be involved.
Yeah, those are my feelings exactly. You know, if my son's aggressive and wants to play football, then, yes, that's fine. I've also seen parents push their kids into football, and they go out and get trounced, and they hate it. Like, that,
right.
That's borderline child abuse. But I have very similar – the game of football has given both of us so much, and that's how I feel about it as well. After spending time with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, what makes him so special at the quarterback position?
Well, first off, he's supremely talented. His arm talent is second to none. His athleticism is very, very good. We would do what they call quarterback school, and it's a series of drills. You're doing jump rope. You're taking the ball around your leg. You're throwing at targets. And – it was rare if we beat him in any of those things ever. So I think I won the jump rope one day, and it was like a huge celebration. I mean, this guy's athleticism was off the charts. And then his knowledge, I mean, he's you know, played with Fitzpatrick, who's obviously super smart. Aaron Rodgers is, I mean, football smart and off the field smarts. He's very smart, but football smarts, he's as smart as anybody I've been around. He can see things and play with a calm head. Like he could tell me, you know, we would try to steal signals or whatever during the game, and I would watch the safeties or the linebackers, see what kind of hand signals they're kind of doling out, and he would be able to tell me what they signaled and tell me what they were calling out. So
wow.
There were times where he would pick up the defensive call. So if they were calling whatever they said that meant cover two, he knew the word. And he could listen for it as he was playing football and knowing what he had to do. So he was that kind of level smart. But he just has it all. The athleticism, the arm talent, the smarts, and he has the drive. I mean, I don't want to get on his bad list for saying he's sensitive like some of those other guys said, but he will remember everything that anyone has ever said about him, and if it's something he can use to motivate him, he uses it. And it's It is it's crazy how much he can remember that people have said in the past. You know, somebody talked about how he held the ball, and he remembered that.
Wow.
There were even times, and I don't even want to get into the McCarthy thing, but he would ask Mike, hey, why did you think Alex Smith was more athletic than me? And that would motivate him. Like it motivated him to become a better athlete, I think. So he used that. He used everything. He used everything, and he probably still does to motivate him to go out there and prove everybody wrong.
And it's little things like that that make you the best in the world at something.
Absolutely.
It's like that rare combination. I always say God doesn't bless many people with the total package. He seems to be a total package guy, similar to a LeBron or a Tom Brady or whatever it may be.
Right. He's got it all. And really, you know, like his quick twitch, if you ever look at his quick twitch, his hand, the way he can move his hands quickly, his move his hips quickly, he's as good as I've seen.
That's cool. So I got my chance to go to a bunch of Louisville football games this year, being my first year out of the mm-hmm. league and not having a job last year. There are still a number of number 12 jerseys in the stands, and I'm guessing they're not Dominguez or Philpott jerseys. They are still Brian Brohm jerseys from when they were sold for a long period of time. What are your thoughts on if college players should be reciprocated for that, paid in the moment, paid later, or never paid, and it's just a token? It's a gift to the university.
That's interesting. You know, it gives me a sense of pride to still see people wearing the 12 jersey.
For sure.
It makes you feel good that people remember who you are and they still – or maybe they don't. They just have a 12 jersey that was laying around from somebody else. But they have that jersey on. It makes you feel good. It would be nice if players could see some of that money, if maybe they set it aside until they graduate, they were able to get that at the end of their career or when they're done playing to kind of springboard them into – either the rest of their life or their next career that they want to get into. It would be good if they could somehow filter that money that obviously, you know, when people were buying a 12 jersey when I was playing, they were buying a Brian Brohm jersey.
Right.
Most of the time. Now, maybe that was the only one that was in the store. They wanted a Louisville jersey. I don't know. But that's what how you would take it. So, yeah, if they could give a little bit of that or a cut of that to the player when they're leaving school, I think that would be good. Now you have to look at the recruiting aspect, and will some schools sell more jerseys than
right.
others?
Yeah,
make the guy go there. You know, there's a lot of things to look at that the NCAA has to look at and try to make the right decision about that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And your last point was a huge one. There's with every time you say, well, yeah, let the guy start paying the players or let them do this and that. They're just going to be unfair advantages at different schools. And I'm not sure the answer.
Right.
I'm glad the stipends are more now for players
yes.
than they were back yes. when we paid. I'm not one of those.
They get a great food. They get more money. And they need it. I think it's definitely beneficial, especially the food part where, you know, we had guys that were eating McDonald's every day before they come to practice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't need to be doing that. The schools can feed you better, which they do now.
For sure. Let's get to some recurring questions that we ask weekly, and it's fun to compare answers and see what guys say. If all jobs in America paid the same, what would you do for a living?
I've been thinking about this one for a while. If I just could do anything I wanted to
right.
do and I actually had the talent to do it, then you might be right with me. I would be a country music singer, man. Come on.
Right.
Be a country music singer at night, and then I would coach my kids' youth teams during the day. That would be what I'd do.
That, I think at one point Richie said pro golfer, and I might have agreed with him there, but I think your scenario sounds better than mine. For the sake of the show, you cannot say me, and it might not have been, probably wouldn't have been. Who is your favorite teammate?
Oh. It's not E. Wood. It's got to be E. Wood, man.
Well, you can't say me.
Oh, shoot. That's a good question. I had some great receivers that I threw to. I think if as a young buck sophomore, I leaned on Josh Tench quite a bit, and he played as hard as anybody I've ever played with, and he was really a great person to have around as a sophomore starting quarterback, starting for your first year in college football. He was kind of a guy I knew, hey, all right, I can look to this guy. He's going to bust his butt to get open, and he's going to bust his butt to go catch the ball. I'm good throwing him the ball. So love playing with him. But there's so many, man. I mean, you talk about Harry Douglas, the connection we had, Mario. Talk about playing with Breno. There's a lot of guys that and then obviously handed to Michael Bush. Come on. That was
– right.
You know, him getting hurt was it my junior year?
Probably cost us a national championship.
Kind of, you know, he was playing so good and in such great shape when he went down. It was – he would have been phenomenal that season.
For sure. What's your favorite book?
Let's see. I used to read, and I need to get back. Right now, I'm reading.
You don't have a ton
right
of
now,
time to read.
Right now, I'm reading a lot of children's books, you know, reading to Weston before nap or bedtime. That's basically the books I read. I did just read Bruce Arians' book during the season. I thought that was interesting. It's kind of biographical, but just his thoughts about quarterback play and wanting his guys to be aggressive and cut it loose. I did take that from him and like some of the stuff he said. I used to read a few years back and want to get back into it, some of the John Maxwell leadership type stuff. But those are normally the things I'm reading, is things that are hopefully going to help me get better or help leadership or something that I can take from it and apply in life.
Good deal. What's your favorite restaurant in Louisville? And since there's going to be a bunch of Bills fans listening in and your wife's from Buffalo,
yeah.
Louisville and Buffalo.
Louisville, recently we've been going to Ceviche and really,
really
enjoying
spot.
That. Obviously love Jeff Ruby's in town, but there's so many good restaurants in Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
We try to go to a new one every time we're back in town, me and my wife. So, and there's always new ones popping up. We could probably just keep going to new ones every time we come in town.
Right.
Buffalo, we were on a Bacchus kick quite a bit. We really enjoy their food. And then I always got to go to Barbill when I'm in town.
Ashley's going to fight you for not saying We Checks.
Oh, yeah, We Checks. That is her family. Yeah, they used to, their fish fry during Lent is really good.
What was your first car?
Pontiac Grand Am. I mean, that's what the Brahms drove for about 20 years there. We all had a Pontiac Grand Am.
Every one of them.
So I think it was a hand-me-down from Jeff. I think it was a red Pontiac Grand Am, yeah.
Who is the most famous person in your phone?
Well, besides you, Aaron is still in my phone. I haven't called him in about 7 years. I don't know if it's still the same number. So we got Rodgers.
We should start
in
playing
there.
That
I don't
game.
Know.
I should start.
It's probably not. He would change his number like at least once every 6 months. So it's probably like 10 numbers old. Phil Sims, I would think, maybe.
Super famous. We should
Phil
start
Sims in there.
I should start making people call him.
See if they pick up.
Yeah, like, oh, you say you have his number, and I should make people start calling him. What was your first job?
It's embarrassing to say, but quarterback of the Green Bay Packers.
I love it.
Was my first job that I got paid for, other than cutting grass for my brother or my parents. Kind of wish I would have had a job of some sort before that, but was always in sports and doing something.
But so. You know what? You played sports all year round.
Yeah.
And no one would have ever guessed the way you worked in college that you didn't have a job in high school. So that's a credit
Shoot,
to
man,
your parents. Because I had buddies in high school that their parents had similar philosophies. You play sports all year round.
Right.
You don't need a job. We can financially
support
you. It's okay.
The way you play summer sports now, I mean, I was – in summer, I was football. We worked out in the morning, did 7-on-7. Then I either had a summer basketball game or a summer baseball game. So it was busy. But I do kind of wish I would have had kind of a normal job just to kind of experience it before becoming – such a grown adult.
Well, you've never had a job outside of football.
Not outside of football, no.
Yeah. Correct. And now you work more hours than most. So
yeah, you're right there, no doubt.
What's your favorite movie?
You know, Shawshank Redemption has been my favorite movie for a while. If it comes on, I will watch it. If Rocky comes on, I will watch it. Now, comedies, you get old school – Coming on. I won't turn that off.
Great one.
If Wedding Crashers is on TBS, I'll be sitting in front of it until it's over. If Dumb and Dumber is on, I will watch that. So those are probably my big ones. But Shawshank is kind of the one that has been my favorite for a while, and I still like a lot.
I don't know if it'll get rolling again, but that era of Wedding Crashers, Old School, Anchorman, all those movies within a few years, I mean, that was a pretty special time for comedy.
There's a lot of good comedies, there's no doubt. No doubt. We'll see if they come back.
Good deal. Well, I truly appreciate you coming on the show. We've been buddies since 2004, and, man, we've played in a lot of games together, played in the NFL together, played at Louisville together. We were roommates out of college, in college. So truly special to have you on the show. Thanks for coming.
Oh, man, I appreciate it. I'm honored to be here.
Throughout my NFL career, I worked with many custom clothing companies. Guys would come from around the country and set up shop in our facility and try and sell us clothes. And no one has compared to someone I work with locally in Louisville, Jordan Yoakum with Tom James. He is an expert concierge that can save you time. You know, I don't even have a full-time job right now, and it's hard for me to go to the mall and pick out clothes or to order something online, and it generally doesn't fit, and then I either got to go get it tailored or me and my wife got to go send it back. Put an end to that. Jordan works within a 100-mile radius of Louisville, Kentucky, and he will come to you with the clothes, and it's great. You can contact Jordan at j.yoakum@tomjames.com or visit the website tomjames.com for more info. Let Jordan create a game plan with you for your wardrobe, just like we did preparing for NFL defenses. But instead of attacking defenses, you'll be attacking your next business meeting, wedding, or derby event in style. That's j.yoakum, Y-O-C-U-M, at tomjames.com. And when you contact Jordan, make sure you tell him Eric Wood sent you. Thank you for listening to What's Next with Eric Wood, presented by Green Remedy. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please rate it 5 stars and subscribe. That goes a long way for us with this podcast. Tune in a couple weeks for another new episode.